This sermon is titled Psalms of New Orientation or Life's Good Again.
In 1984, Motorola marketed and sold the first ever portable cellular phone. It was called the Brick. It weighed 2 pounds, almost like a small dumbbell. It cost the first buyers $4,000 and only had a half hour of battery use. For those of you who were raised on Saving the Bell, this is the Zach Morris cell phone right here. Memories. I thought he was the coolest when I was growing up. And onward. So when Motorola announced this, everyone thought they were crazy. No way, this won't sell. It's impractical. What's a portable cellular phone anyway? But thousands upon thousands stood in line to get the first brick, as they called it, and to use that portable cellular phone. And what's interesting is that my dad was one of those who stood in the line to buy the brick. I'm the cute blonde-headed one right next to my dad right there. Obviously, the genetics of his chiseled muscular specimen came to me, not my brother. So my dad stood in that line, and he was proud of his brick. He didn't show it off, but what he liked to do was say, "Oh, you'd like to, can I order you a pizza?" And he'd pick it up and order a pizza on it. He'd like to call people at random spots just to say, "Do you know where I'm standing right now?" And just for the humor of it all. And my dad had this contagious humor about him. He loved to tease his friends. And one thing that he did was, when my mom and I got divorced, one story that I've been told by my dad himself is, when they got divorced, the final divorce day was February 13th. And my dad, being the jokester of it all, was going to somehow make this sad thing funny. So in my dad's language, my mom's lawyer was a non-church word. I'll say the real word is a not nice lady. And so my dad was convinced that this not nice lady was not nice to him. And so he had to make it funny. Since it was the day before Valentine's Day, right before the sentence was given, he was given a word to say, and he looked at her and said, "I hope you have a very happy Valentine's Day." To which the judge struck down the gavel and said, "You need to get her all her lawyer fees right away." So to which he responded, "Yes, sir, I'll take care of that." And the story goes that he went to every bank in town, and to pay the $343 fee, he got pennies. And he got a big box with a huge dolly, and then he wrapped that box with hearts that said, "Be my Valentine." And he marched that into her office, dropped it off at her office, and said, "Happy Valentine's Day," and proceeded to walk out of the building. That's the kind of guy my dad was. Always giving someone a prank, always pulling someone's leg. So when he got sick, it was a shock to all of us. None of us thought that the strong rock of our family could get sick. In fact, my brother and I were in denial for the longest time. I was 15 and my brother was 14, and we thought, there's no way anything could happen to our dad. But we would soon be backpedaling from the knowledge that something does go wrong. Things happen that we can't always explain. And so from his hospital bed, my dad called me and my mom handed me the phone. And I remember not really knowing how to react as a 15-year-old. And my dad said, of course, "Well, hi, Dale." But he didn't have that pop in his voice, that joking humor. It was faint. It was not fully the dad that I had known my whole life. And he said to me something like this. He said, "The operation didn't go as expected. I don't have much longer to live." To which I echoed out a very, very frail, "Okay." To which he responded, "We're going to make the most of the time we have. I'm going to come home. We're going to go on some vacations. We're going to take some time away. We're going to make the best of this." To which I remained speechless because I had no idea how to respond. And then his words, "I love you, Dale. I love you too, Dad. We all have the option. When we hear news like this, when we encounter the painful places in life, to deny it, to shove it down, to pretend like it's not there, or we can face it. Or we can live and embrace the darkness and pain that we experience. The Psalms of disorientation invite us not only to embrace this movement of our soul, this experience, but to learn to talk back to God. To say, why have you forsaken me, God? To say, how long, O Lord, will I always have this sorrow in my heart and this pain in my soul? The Psalms are beautiful literature that teach us in the darkness, in the pain, we have a voice to God. We have a God who's present to us in that pain. Even though the why questions remain, we have a God who is with us, who meets us in the darkness and gives us the ability to voice our pain. So whenever we get the phone call, we have the choice to resist it, to deny it, to shove it down, or to accept the reality of life, to look at the real as it is, and somehow to move forward. Now, moving forward is the hard part. It's different for every one of us, depending on the type of pain, depending on how close we are, depending on who we are inside. When we embrace the darkness and the pain, we find ourselves soon, as time goes by, ever slowly, we take a walk outside, and the aroma of the air smells like pine fireplaces in our city, and our hearts feel warmed in some small ways. Maybe we go up to the cemetery and watch as the deer play on our beautiful countryside there. Maybe we hear our children laughing and playing, and we're warmed a little bit more, day by day, moment by moment. Maybe a hug and an embrace from a spouse that just seems to make it all feel better. Or maybe it's encouraging letters, phone calls. Or maybe it's a combination of all these moments. Our ancient Hebrew relatives called this hased. It's the Hebrew word that translates steadfast love. Hased is that dynamic love from God that comes again and again and again. It's the reality of our life. It is a greater reality than pain that steadfast love comes just like rain in a drought. Now this Hebrew word, it can't be described with just one word. The NRSV Bible that we read says it this way, steadfast love. But it carries all this connotations of covenant fidelity. The God who said, I will never leave or forsake you, is the God of hased. Loyalty, faithfulness, loving kindness, God-like love. This kind of godly bond and promise, this dynamic love between God and all God's people. The hased warms our hearts from the deep, dark places that we experience. The hased is critical to the Psalms of new orientation. The hased reminds us that there is another dynamic reality in the universe that we all experience. Love. Steadfast love. And the poet in today's psalm has a lot to say about this steadfast love. In fact, the word hased is used 4 different times. In fact, the theme of Psalm 103 is hased. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless His holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and do not forget all His benefits. Who forgives all your iniquity. Who heals all your diseases. Who redeems your life from the pit. Who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy, who satisfies you with good as long as you live, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. The picture that the poet presents to us is that of a coronation where a king or queen is crowned. And as many of you know, it doesn't take our imaginations much to imagine when a king or queen is crowned. It's the bestowing of power, of honor, of land, of incredible treasures. But in this passage, it flips that image on its head. We were once people in exile, people who experienced the depth of pain and heartache, and now we are given the crown of steadfast love. We are given entrance into a kingdom of love. We are given the most valuable commodity, greater than land and property and treasures. Love, the steadfast love of God. And then the poet goes on and says, "The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love." It doesn't stop there. The poet says, "For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is his steadfast love towards those who fear him." And then the last one in that great poem. "As for mortals, their days are like grass. They flourish like a flower of the field. For the wind passes over it, and it is gone, and its place knows it no more. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him." You can also replace for fear, awe, wonder, this kind of awesomeness that we encounter day in and day out with our grandkids or looking at nature. This sense of grandeur of what this human life can be about. And then it says, "To those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments." Psalm 103 burst onto the scene, reminding us of another dynamic reality besides pain and heartbreak, but the reality of steadfast love. The reality that life is always more than a phone call of darkness, that life brings us light and joy. But the Psalms of New Orientation are always connected to the Psalms of Disorientation. Life is good again, but the residues of all that we had been through stick in our gut. A week ago, Stacy and I had a little Frederickson family walk in our neighborhood. And as we walked down this hill, Irie's little voice said, Trey and I were about 10 feet ahead of Irie and Stacy, and Irie's little voice said, "I see moon, Mama. I see moon." And so that little voice, that steadfast love, Trey and I knew what we had to do, turn around and start walking up the hill. And Mom was looking at this moon, but Irie, in her little excited 2-year-old way, said, "I see moon, Dada. I see moon." And I'm looking for this moon, and I don't see it. And I think maybe she's making it up, but out of frustration that her dad and her mom can't see the moon, she says, "I see moon, bro, I see moon." And she's erupting with this sense of awe, this sense of wonder of what this is all about. And finally, I'm like, "Where is this moon? Did she make it up?" I had to kneel down where she was looking from. Only from her perspective could I see the moon. From my perspective, there was a house that blocked it here. From Trey's perspective, there was some shrubbery that blocked it. But from her perspective, you could see the moon. That's what it's like with steadfast love. We have a lot of questions about the why this stuff happens, why we live in this place. But the Bible doesn't spend a lot of time on that. The Bible spends time on the other reality. The reality of steadfast love that visits our life day after day in increasingly small and seemingly insignificant ways. But we have to learn to get down, to get perspective, to be able to see the steadfast love that's bursting forth in all of our life. We have to retrain our eyesight to see where God is present to each one of us. And so, when we ask those gut questions, "How am I going to pay the bills this month?" we look for steadfast love. We look for a random gift that came from nowhere, a job opportunity that we didn't know was possible. When we ask those deep gut questions of, am I a beautiful person? Or do I have what it takes? We find that when we pause to listen to the silence, that God tells us we are loved, we are accepted, we are the beloved. We find that when we ask those questions of, can I get up and go to work another day, that God's steadfast love empowers us. We find that when we ask those questions, if our marriage is going to fail, that God's steadfast love opens new ways to love our spouse, new opportunities to love and to open up to one another. We find when we ask the question, why is this happening to me, that we can be met in unsuspected ways with steadfast love. We find that when we ask the questions about if we could take this abuse any longer, if we can carry this burden anywhere, that there's a door open to us, a door beaming with steadfast love. We just have to walk through it. We find that when we hear the question, can I survive more bad news? Or where's the hope in the midst of my declining health and broken body? We find a God who showers rain upon us of steadfast love. And we ask ourselves, who can put these broken pieces of my life together again? And the ancient Hebrew relatives whose scriptures drip for us this morning tells us, Hesed, Hesed, steadfast love, I will never leave or forsake you. I like to think about, sometimes imagine, what my dad would have thought about the iPhone revolution. I love to imagine that if he were able to be there, he would have been standing in that line with the thousands upon thousands, albeit millions, that stood in line to get this phone. But then I think, no, that's not like my dad at all. He would have woken up before me, 2 hours before me, got the phone, told me they were all sold out, and then tricked me for 2 weeks without having the phone. We live in a world that is connected to everyone through our cell phone. We are connected to the entire world through the power of one phone. And the thing about Hesed, the different twist we take this morning, is we are called to listen to the cries of our friends, of our family, of our community, and to use whatever gifts and graces we have to share the Hesed with others. To be that hug to them, to be that word of encouragement, to be that letter or that handout of groceries in need. We become the Hesed and marvel at the steadfast love God showers upon us. The Psalms, the beautiful Psalms, are spiritual food as we journey with the ache. Amen.